All right, my friends, welcome back to Anti-War Radio on Chaos 95.9 in Austin, Texas. And our next guest is Ivan Elin from the Center on Peace and Liberty at the Independent Institute. His weekly article can be found at antiwar.com/Elin and at, of course, independent.org. Welcome to the show, Ivan.
Thanks for having me on.
It's been a while since we spoke, and I was really intrigued by your article here about Kosovo. And, you know, the Balkans is a topic that hardly gets any attention at all on this show or pretty much anywhere else. But it's very important news going on this right around this time. I won't just say this week, for the past while, there's been this push. It seems like it's coming to a head for Kosovo to finally declare full independence from Serbia. And I guess if we could start with you just sort of giving us a background about how we got to where we are, what the problem is, and then we'll get into your proposed solution.
Well, people have long since forgotten the war during the last years of the Clinton administration. In 1999, when the Clinton administration bombed Kosovo for more than 70 days, Serbia and Kosovo. The problem was that Kosovo is a province of Serbia, but this province, unlike the rest of the Serbia, which contains mostly Serbs, is 90% Albanian. There's a 10% Serb minority. Well, what happened was the Kosovar forces, the KLA, Kosovo Liberation Army, started attacking the Serbs. Well, the Serbs, and they did that because they wanted an overreaction and to internationalize the war, which they were able to do. Serbia overreacted and started ethnically cleansing Albanians. Now, the reason that Serbia is, you might say, well, not many Serbs live in this province. Why would they care? Well, Serbia has kind of moved around on the map of Europe a little bit, and the medieval Serb kingdom was centered in Kosovo, and there are many shrines there, both religious and historic, as well as a big battlefield where the Serbs lost to the Turks that's revered. And so they want these sites. What happened was U.S. and NATO bombed Serbs, and they withdrew their forces, and since 1999, this Albanian province has been basically, although not officially, an independent country, but it's been under UN governance. And now, of course, it's come time for the independence to occur. The Serbs still want the province because they regard it as the cradle of their civilization. But, of course, possession is nine-tenths of the law, so the Albanians have nine-tenths of the law plus nine-tenths of the population.
That sounds like a pretty old conflict for America to be getting involved in.
Right. Well, we never should have gotten involved in it in the first place. And what I'm worried about is that if they don't do this partition right, that is the partition of Kosovo from Serbia, they could have renewed violence. Maybe not now. Well, there could be renewed violence now, but there could be, even if there isn't now, down the road, because the Serbs will still want these shrines and that sort of thing. So my proposal is to do a partition within a partition so that the Serbs get some of these shrines, maybe not necessarily all of them. They'll have to be compromised, but maybe the key ones. And so they partition Kosovo as they're partitioning it from Serbia, giving back some of these land with the shrines on it to the Serbs. And I think that will be a more stable situation over the long term.
Yeah, well, so we should just take it for granted then that Kosovo will be independent from Serbia. There's just no stopping that at this point.
Well, I think, you know, the Serbs are still saying we want it all, you know, we want it all. But, of course, the deck is sort of stacked against the Serbs. They have a Russian ally. But the United States, the European Union, and, of course, the Kosovar Albanians all want independence. And, surprisingly, the Western countries are, I think, to stick it to the Serbs and Russia, because our policy in the Balkans was always against Serbia. Whatever Serbia didn't want, we wanted. And, of course, Serbia is also allied with Russia, which is still somewhat of a adversary for us, or at least we behave as they are, even though we really wouldn't have to. So I think the European Union and the United States will recognize this when it happens. Now, they're urging to go slow because it is very inflammatory to the Serbs and the Russians, but going slow, it's still not going to correct the problem, because we're 8 years down the road from the war, and it's the issue is still smoldering. So taking it slow is not going to work. They have to find some other compromise. And I'm afraid that this could ultimately result in a conflict potentially between the Russia and the U.S., although you say, well, how could it ever get to that? Well, you know, the Russians want to renew their stock in the world. They want to increase their power. And the United States, of course, has its fingers all over the place. So, and of course, Russia and the United States are nuclear armed powers, so they have to be careful. And I think this is one way to defuse the situation long before it becomes a problem by just giving the Serbs a few of these sites back and a small part of Kosovo. The Albanian Kosovars, of course, would be against this because they want as much territory as they can get. Mm-hmm. But I think if they were truly smart, they would say, well, we'll take a little bit less territory and we'll have better relations with our neighbor Serbia and with the other countries around there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now, there's a couple questions there. When you say that America's policy was always the opposite of whatever the Serbs want, was that because of their ties to Russia? That was a way
I think to some extent, and because they were also still socialist, they were one of the few countries that were socialist, so there was this idea that, you know, the United States should be opposed to that. Plus, they were the biggest power in the former Yugoslavia, and so the United States and the West actually created that war in the first place, or at least certainly exacerbated it by recognizing Croatia and Slovenia when they first seceded from Yugoslavia. And of course, they were really seceding from Serb dominance within the Yugoslav Federation.
But then recognizing their independence caused a lot of people to be stuck on the wrong side of the lines.
Right. I think it will. And it's not so much if a small minority of one ethnic group is stuck on the line. I don't think the real issue, surprisingly, in Kosovo is the 10% Serb population, because they don't really threaten the majority of Albanians. There has been some violence, and certainly, you know, there could be in the future. But I think the main issue is going to be these lands that hold these sacred shrines. Mm-hmm. Because I've studied partitions in history, and that always seems to be a problem. Countries will trade off land that's economically or strategically valued, but when it comes to intangible things like religion or historic or just plain culture or, you know, national, this is very important to our nation. Mm-hmm. Nations really can't trade off for that because they need that specific land. And so I think this is going to be a problem since the cradle of Serb civilization was there. Of course, this goes back to the Middle Ages, so it's been going on for hundreds of years that the Serbs think this. So they're not going to forget about these sites mm-hmm. easily. And I think, you know, even if they can't do much about it now because there's still NATO troops in Kosovo, at some point down the future, this is going to cause instability. Of course, an example of this is when the British drew the lines to make Iraq an artificial country way back after World War One. And look, it took until, the next, or at least late in the 20th century and early in the 21st century for that all to hit the fan. And so I think, you know, when we draw these artificial lines and we don't try to adjust them, the problem that the international community has is that they tend to go according to existing boundaries, and that oftentimes is a really bad move because, and it certainly wasn't the case of Iraq, and because they went by the provincial boundaries of the Ottoman Empire. But they, of course, Iraq made no sense. And I think what they're doing, if there is a unilateral secession, which there probably will be in March, and if the Western powers agree to it, they're making a big mistake because those sites and those things that are important to the Serbs are still in Kosovo. Mm-hmm. And they want, you know, they'll want those back at some point.
Now, can you elaborate a little bit about the fractions you, in your article, you cite Ireland as an example of, I guess basically saying if the minority population is small enough, they're less likely to be, you know, warred against outright. It's when the minority is a large minority that threatens the majority that's when the real violence and ethnic cleansing goes.
Well, Ireland is an excellent example. Ireland, the entire Ireland was partitioned in 1921, and the northern part was about 67% Protestant, 33% Catholic. That's just a rough figure. It was in the 30% Catholic range. That's a significant minority. And of course, we've had decades of violence because the northern, it's an analogous situation to Kosovo, because what the Protestants should have done at the time is accepted a little less territory, and they should have partitioned so that most of the Catholics, went with the south of Ireland, and they wouldn't have had all this problem. And in contrast to that, in the southern part of Ireland, the country of Ireland, what is the country of Ireland now, there's less than 10% Protestants. And you never hear about the Protestants in Ireland, because they were a small minority, and they've always lived in peace with the over 90% Catholic majority. So you can see the difference right there in one country, or at least one island, what happened when you have a small minority living with a large minority versus a large minority living with a majority. So what happens in this case is that the large majority, or the large minority, threatens the majority, and vice versa, and they start arming themselves to defend themselves. But the problem is the other side can't see it that it's in defense, and so they start arming, and then you get an arms race, and then you get violence. So, but if you have a very small minority, the majority knows that there's no way that they could get enough weapons to offset the differences in population in any battle. So there's no threat there. So I think when countries are partitioned, they don't need to get every single person from the minority group on the right side of the line, but they need to make it so that there's only a small minority living on the other side of the line, and that will help out a lot. But of course, in the case of Kosovo, the difference between Kosovo and Ireland is that there are these sites that are sacred to the Serbs, and that is a significant difference with the case of Ireland.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'll tell you, one day people of the world are going to embrace individualism, and we won't have to worry about all this silliness anymore. But let me ask you this. Do you think that the United States and or the UN or the European community or whatever they call it now is in a good position to basically take up your recommendations here and tell the Kosovars, look, you're going to get your independence, but it would be the right thing to do, and you know it, to go ahead and let the Serbs retain some sovereignty over these holy sites, and that way, you know, it'll be a reasonable compromise for everybody. Can the Kosovars be brought along to your idea if the policymakers were to adopt it?
Well, I think the Russia and the United States have both had a bad influence on this, because according to diplomats who've been in these negotiations, the Serbs have said, well, we can't have the Russians take a harder line position, a harder line pro-Serb position than we do. And the Kosovar Albanians were saying, well, we can't have President Bush take a harder line position for the Kosovars than we do. So I think there's a lot of, like, as in the Cold War, you know, supposedly the Cold War is over, but of course we all know that there's still jousting between Russia and the United States, and I think that's really getting in the way of this. And I think what really would help would Russia and the U.S. would get together and say, hey, we're going to pressure both sides of this thing to come down on a compromise along the lines that I just mentioned, letting the Serbs have some of these sites and yet letting Kosovo have its independence. Because Kosovo, there is a such thing as self-determination. And as individualists, we may not like the choices that people make to divide along ethnic lines. But, I mean, you know, people in our country also make decisions about where they want to live and who they want to live with. And we do have ethnic communities that feel better living with people of their ethnic communities. Whether that's the right choice or not, we can't say, I don't think. But some people don't want to do that, and other people do. But the key thing here is, I think in this particular case, the Kosovars would like to be independent from Serbia. And if the Serbs get some of these sites back, they might be willing to make a compromise so that this can be a stable independence rather than a rocky independent.
Mm-hmm. Now, two more things real quickly. I'm sorry, I know you have to go, but I wanted to bring up for you to comment when you mentioned earlier about the possibility, a real possibility, that a situation like this in the Balkans could end up into a conflict between the United States and Russia. You reminded me of that BBC story about how General Wesley Clark, when he was the Supreme Allied Commander of NATO and started the war under Bill Clinton in 99, the Russians sent in a team in the middle of the night, I guess early, right, a few hours early, and took over the airport in Pristina. And Wesley Clark wanted to bomb them. And it was the British general, Sir Michael Jackson, who said, "Go to hell. I'm not going to start World War III for you, pal." And basically mutinied, refused to follow orders from the Supreme Commander of NATO, and averted the war at that point.
Yeah, that's why I was always a little uneasy about Clark running for president, because he seemed to exhibit bad judgment there. Maybe he forgot that Russia and U.S. both had nuclear weapons, and when you start attacking the forces of another country, it's possible to ultimately end up in a nuclear holocaust, especially over some stupid airport in Kosovo, you know.
So, just insanity.
So the stakes were not that high, and yet this is how our policymakers behave with and I'll make a statement here about our overall foreign policy. These interventionism leads to the thinking that everything is important. You know, bottom line, Kosovo is not that important to U.S. security, even though it's in Europe. But the problem that I have, and the reason I'm trying to suggest something, is that this would take minimal diplomatic activity by the U.S. to pressure the Kosovars and minimal diplomatic activity by Russia to pressure the Serbs to get some sort of an agreement, so that perhaps we wouldn't have to have all these NATO troops. There's 16,000 NATO troops still in Kosovo. We wouldn't have to have those there, and we wouldn't run the risk of getting dragged into this thing. Because, as you know, once we get involved in a place, people always look to us to go back and fix whatever problem we made the first time or has developed since we went in the first time. You know, look at Haiti, how many times we've intervene there.
Mm-hmm.
So inevitably, there's going to be expectations that, you know, hey, we intervened way back in 1999, and so we need to go back in there again. And that's kind of what I'm trying to avoid here.
Yeah, absolutely. And one last thing real quick, and, you know, just kind of as an aside, I wonder what you think about the news of the Lakota Nation ripping up their treaties and declaring independence. Did you see that?
You know, it's
speaking of ethnic self-determination and so forth.
Right. Well, you know, the problem that we have with all those is that the U.S. government didn't honor the treaties in the beginning. And so I can understand why the Indians in the United States are still disgruntled about what they got, because every treaty that they ever signed with the U.S. government was broken. So, you know, they're down to these reservations that are not very good land and that sort of thing. And, you know, of course, the white population has the rest of the country. So these are questions. But if people want to self-determine their existence, that is self-determination, what right do you have to say that they can't do it? Now, I think in that case, that some agreement could be reached. I don't think there's going to be armed hostilities. But in Kosovo, I think it's a possibility that you could have renewed violence, because we saw violence in 2004, which has been pretty recently. So I think, you know, the same issue came up in the South during the Civil War. I mean, Lincoln could have just said, well, okay, you guys don't want to live with us anymore. You don't want to be part of this country. You know, okay. And I think that we have the same issue in Bolivia today, where four provinces are want autonomy and the central government doesn't want to give it to them. So this issue recurs time and again.
Yep. All right. Well, I know you have to go. I really appreciate your insight. We should do this more often, everybody. It's Ivan Elin from the Independent Institute, the director of On Power. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.